And welcome, Pewter peeps, to the all-new PewterCast, your favorite spot for your Bucks news and analysis takes, hot and otherwise. That is Rent Dex. I'm Steve Carney. It is so great to have you here today. And joining us this week, oh, look at this guy. Brand new to PewterReport.com, the one and only J.C. Allen. Is that, look at that hat. You can tell he's new, that hat. That hat has no sweat stains on it. What's going on? I don't see any sweat stains. That hat looks brand effing new. Not there ain't a sweat mark on that thing. And I know you've been out at camp, so you must have like a dozen of those. Scott Reynolds must be throwing them at you. Here, we get more of these hats. So first off, welcome to the show. Appreciate you giving us a couple of minutes.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate being here.
It's amazing. Ren actually said something because he said he was going to be frozen in time for the first 10 minutes or so of the broadcast. We always start with, how did you get here? And so I want to ask you, because you are the new guy at Pewter Report, the FNG, as they like to call him. So how did you get here?
So it's actually quite crazy story. First off, going way back to the roots from when I was born in California, moved to Massachusetts when I was very young. I grew up there, spent about 32 years of my life there, including the first 20 years of 19 years of Tom Brady's career. So really, mm-hmm. football in 1996 on their Super Bowl run against the Packers and kind of followed up there. And I played middle school into high school. And then, Tom Brady happened 2001 and the dynasty was started. Really followed his career pretty intensely. I'm a huge guy in draft Nick into the draft, into offseason, into just the game itself. So it took a really, now we have wonderful analytics to back things up other than just, that's an opinion. So it's great how that's evolved. But, just kind of getting into it myself growing up throughout high school and after that. Recently, 2 years ago, back in June, my family had an opportunity to move down to Tampa. So we took it, fresh start, change. And, I've loved being down here. I love the people down here. Although for the first 6 months, I only knew five people from Florida. Everywhere else seemed to be from everywhere else, but I think that's a common thread. It's a melting pot. But I was looking once me and my son, we went to training camp. We went to a preseason game. We went to a couple of games in the Jameis Winston era. We went to the last game we went to of the season was the Texans game. We're sitting in the lower bowl end zone, and Jameis did Jameis things and threw a pick and then threw another pick six back-to-back in a row. And you could just see the amount of Texans fans, the lack of Bucks fans, and how empty the stadium was. And because of the hometown team, they played the Patriots, which I am a fan of. They play them once every 4 years. I figured, hey, this is the team I'll root for, the NFC. Let's root for this team. And we became fans of this team as well, rooting for their success. Well, with Jameis, we knew that was going to happen. In January of that year, after that offseason, I put out a long post on my Facebook listing the reasons why I thought Tom Brady might actually choose Tampa. And I got ridiculed, blasted by everyone. He's not going there. He's going to San Diego. He's going to this place. Sure enough, fast forward 2 months later, in March, Tom Brady signs. And now everyone's like, oh, you were right. But anyways, to progress the story along, how I kind of got my start in this field was I was looking for somewhere other than radio to pick up Bucks coverage. I wanted to know what fans thought. I wanted to know what media thought. I wanted to know everyone's reaction on Tom and then subsequently Gronk coming right behind him. I stumbled upon some Facebook groups and found a show called The Sports Web. Bucks Report, and I turned into being a caller on there and progressing as a caller, bringing in good takes. I had watched Brady and Gronk, so I knew a lot about them, a lot about their play style, a lot about how they looked at things on the field, and I brought that knowledge, and it was well received by people who enjoyed the show and by Peter and the staff at Bucks Report. In May, they offered me an opportunity to come on as a guest and write an article piece. That turned into multiple guest spots and then turned into me being added as an employee there. Shortly thereafter, getting my own show, which was awesome, amazing. Doing great game day stuff, doing game coverage, doing article writing for them. It was an amazing experience, and one that I'll that's how my story starts in this field. Fast forward to the Super Bowl. I ended up actually contracting COVID during the Super Bowl, was not able to attend as media, but the COVID had a double entendre there. Everything was via Zoom conferences. So I got to go and I got to speak with the players, Patrick Mahomes, everybody but Tom Brady, of course, the one guy, you know, who I've followed throughout his entire career. But continued writing, continued to host my show. And apparently it caught the eyes of the guys over at Pewter Report. They asked me if I would like to join. And here I am, about a month into my time over there. Love it over here. They've been amazingly supportive, creatively, professionally. And training camp just started. I got to go to my first couple practices over the last week. And it's been an amazing experience so far. And I really love covering this team. I love the passion the fans have. I love the skepticism the fans have. I told them last year going into it, like, Tom's here, you guys are gonna do well. Trust me. You know, just that bye week is perfectly positioned. It's Patriots football down here in Tampa. They're gonna run the table after the bye week and just wait. And they actually went all the way, which, you know, was surprising the first season, not gonna lie, but I did not expect it, if that makes sense. I just know the type of, and everyone has seen the type of level that Tom Brady commands and how he lifts players around him. So here we go. Now we're going into my second full season covering the team with a different publication that I am very excited to join. And Super Bowl expectations back on the shelf. They've returned all their starters. And so far in camp, I mean, it looks like they don't have much competition when it comes to having a complete roster built around them.
Yeah, and it's certainly something that we'll have we'll definitely have to talk about, the fact that there is very little drama going on at training camp here.
You know who else doesn't have any competition?
Yeah, I know exactly who does not have any competition right now, and that is the folks at Manscaped. As the Pewtercast is sponsored this week in part by Manscaped, as they are back here with us once again. And I have told the story too many times to be useful, about a guy that I knew when I was in the Navy.
It's still gross.
It's still nasty. That used the same razor both down low and up high. Yeah, not the smartest cookie in the jar. There, I'll tell it. Let's put it that way. That guy, he certainly could have used Manscaped, and you definitely can use Manscaped. And they've got their brand new Performance Package 4.0 that's out right now, including the brand new lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, fourth generation trimmer, cutting edge ceramic blade, 7,000 RPM motor. Travel lock, waterproof, just, you know, it's the best thing money can buy for your nether regions. Also the Weed Whacker 4.0 with a to help with the ear and the nose hair, and plenty more in their Performance Package. And you can get the Performance Package for 20% off and get free shipping by going to manscaped.com and using the code FANSIDED20. That's 20% off, free shipping as well with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com for a clean trinity and beyond. Your nether regions will certainly thank you.
Let me tell you something too, Steve. I've been out at training camp and it's been hot.
Yes. It's hot as balls.
And exactly. And to your point, the Reviver kit and the wipes that they have have been clutch, as well as the deodorant.
So yes, the ball deodorant is a must if you're going to training camp.
Oh, yeah. So
at all.
You slap that on before. You wipe yourself after. You put a little Reviver on there, smelling good as new.
Look at that. See, JC knows the deal when it comes to Manscaped. Get involved with Manscaped. Again, FANSIDED20 is the promo code when you go to manscaped.com. It's 20% off and free shipping.
All right. Now, let's talk Bucks. Week one of training camp's in the book. As we talked about a little bit before, and Carney talked about just a little bit right before the Manscaped, is like there's not a lot of drama. There's no starting positions really up for grabs. You can make an argument.
No more drama.
Sure. I have no idea what that means, but if you say so, maybe the safety group, you know, you can make an argument if Edwards is going to push Whitehead out, and we'll talk about that. But really what we're going to get into is JC, of course, we've talked about how he's boots on the ground there, been to a few practices. Plus, he's also in the PR, Pewter Report chat rooms. So feel free to take from there and sort of an overall vibe, not only yours, but also what, you know, what Pewter Report is feeling. And we're going to go through, you know, after 1 week, like where these guys stand. Okay. Now I want to start with the interior defensive line. And the reason I want to start there is because I will eat my cell phone if the Bucs don't draft an interior defensive lineman in day one or day two next year. I'll even narrow that down as we get into the draft later on. But right now, day one or day two, the Bucs need an interior defensive lineman. A big guy that I've said is sort of a put up or shut up year is Khalil Davis, the draft pick from Nebraska a couple years ago. I've heard Ledbetter's come in great shape. He's looked good. Of course, Pat O'Connor's still hanging around. So we'll start at the interior defensive line. What have you seen? What does Pewter Report think? How's it going? I know it's only been 2 days in pads, but I just kind of want to start there. What are your thoughts besides, of course, the Golsons, the Veas, the Sue, the McClendon? We got those guys.
I think the top four are locked in no matter right. what. I think you're looking at, as you said, Vea, Sue, Nacho, and also Golston. I think those four. I think McClendon is...
Oh, that's right. You think McClendon might have a chance getting booted.
I think he's 80% in, and it's not because of his play at all. I think he's that big run stuffing, take up space type of guy that if something does happen to Vito, you're going to want on your defensive line. But I just, he's 35 years old. He's going to be the oldest defensive lineman. Let me just emphasize those words for anyone watching. Oldest defensive lineman to take a snap in football this year, as he was as well last year. So when you're looking at some of the young guys, some of the youth, and you mentioned their names, I think another guy who I think is probably locked in is Pat O'Connor as well. I mean, just because he's such a key factor on special teams, he's really starting to turn the corner too defensively at his position. I mean, he had the block punt last year. He also had his first career sack. I think because of the role he plays on special teams, he's probably a solid bet to make the team. So now, I mean, you take those five guys and you want to include McClendon, you're really probably looking at one more roster spot. And you mentioned the names, Jeremiah Ledbetter, who has looked very impressive in camp. He's come in, he's had would-be sacks, he's had a lot of good pressures. He's a guy who looks in great shape. He can do a little bit of both, stop the run, rush the passer. I think he's making a really good case for the team to stick around. The problem with him is he's done this almost every, you know, the last two preseasons. Last year was a little bit different, but the last, you know, couple seasons is he's looked great in preseason, looked great in training camp, but then he gets hurt later on towards the end of camp. So if he can stay healthy, he's going to be someone to really watch as someone pushing. And the guy he's pushing is exactly who you mentioned before, is Khalil Davis, a sixth round pick out of last year. He brings something to this defensive line that they don't have. His quick
ability. It's like, why did they draft him? This guy does not fit the mold at all.
Yeah, so his quick twitch ability, his pass rush, and what we've seen. I mean, yesterday during one-on-ones, you had the O-line versus D-line lined up. Now they're all lined up, but it's pretty much man-on-man. He really embarrassed, and I emphasize embarrassed, Ali Marpet on two consecutive plays. And just one of them just ragdolled him out of the way. The other one just pushed him back and gave him a little rip move out of the way as well. And it was quite impressive. So I think Khalil Davis is starting to hit his stride. Again, not having that full offseason definitely hurt him. And he mentioned it himself. You know, it was kind of like a red shirt year for him with the coaching staff, learning, being able to pick the guy's brains in front of him in a Sue and a Golston, even a Vita Vea for a little bit. And I think that the way he's looked, it's going to be hard to place one of these guys over him at the back end of the roster. I mean, they got guys like Sam Renner who's looked all right, but he's more of a camp body. He's just not going to be the guy there. And another guy, Benning Potawae, who I'm a fan of. He's that McClendon, but he's younger and he's not as experienced. And you know, he got into a few games last year, and when he did, was set up against the run, he had a very high run blocking grade from PFF. And that's the kind of guy you're looking for, a big body. But I think he probably needs another year on the practice squad. I'm not sure anyone's going to pick him up, and I think the Bucks will be able to slide him on there, call him up as needed if they do need him. So really, it's coming down to Jeremiah Ledbetter and Khalil Davis if we're keeping Steve McClendon on the roster, which I think they will, just because of the experience and the size and everything that he can bring in. You know, more of a run stuffer. You saw him get after Patrick Mahomes a couple times in the Super Bowl. So, you know, a little bit underrated part of his game. Again, we're only 3 days now into pads, so there's still plenty of practice, plenty of preseason games for Bucks coaches to be swayed one way or another, whether it be Ledbetter or Khalil Davis. I think it's going to be very tough for them to try to sneak one of those guys through waivers if they continue the level of play. Mm-hmm. So it just comes down to, what are you looking for more on this team? At this point, I can't answer that question. If I had to go with someone, I would think they would stick with Khalil Davis just because of the draft stock that they put into him. Sixth round pick, not a lot, but still, they drafted him that high over other players for a reason. And as for what you said, yeah, I agree. They need to draft a defensive lineman, definitely within the next. But, you know, they're probably going to take a running back in the first round next year anyway. So, you know, I think that's high in the priority. As Jason Light said multiple times, he thought this was a very weak defensive tackle draft. You saw that by the way guys fell. I don't think there was one taken until the second round with Christian Barmore. Yeah. And then even a guy like Florida State's Marvin Wilson went undrafted, who, if he came out the year prior, he probably would have been a late first, mid-second round pick.
Yeah.
At worst, slides all the way undrafted to the Cleveland Browns, who I think they got a great player if he can be motivated. But it just wasn't a strong draft for that. You already saw another guy, Jay Tufele, who I really like, got cut by the Vikings. Different scenario. He got shot five times back home, so he wasn't going to be able to play anyways. But, you know, I think defensive line will be on their priority list. But I do think they've got a lot of good young guys that can continue to develop, learn, and build and be ready to be able to contribute next year.
Yeah, Ren is
good. Yeah, Ledbetter's a guy who's been in the hopper, as you talked about, a couple of preseasons. He's been developing. I was really surprised to hear all the praise that's been dumped on him, because, you know, watching practices, not last year, we didn't, you know, try to go, but the 2 years before that, 1 year Ledbetter wasn't there. I went to every single practice, like every single one. And he would flash, you know, like maybe every other day, but it'd be for like one rep or two reps. So hearing him sort of climb up the charts and getting, you know, sort of praise that's not asked about, unwarranted praise, is something nice to hear, especially since, you know, everyone's old. You know, you talk about McClendon, also the second oldest guy who's going to take a snap as a defensive lineman is Dominican Sue. Yeah. So we got the two oldest.
Yeah.
So if the fans that are in the know, they know about Khalil Davis. We talked about, he's quick twitch. He's more of a Gerald McCoy type, get between the gaps, a penetrator, a disruptor type. That's sort of where he hangs. It's like, when he gets in trouble, that's what he goes to. That's where he hangs his hat. Ledbetter, what is about him? Is it like tenacious motor? Is it power? Does he have a good toolbox? Is it get off? Like, when you've seen him this year and his improvement, when you watch him in the reps, like what's sort of at his outstanding trait?
Well, for right now, we're starting to see them as the pads come on, especially, you know, a little bit yesterday and now even more today from what I'm hearing from the guys at practice, is they're starting to mix up matchups. So before, he was going against the unit two, unit three offensive line. So he was definitely showing out with his strength, his ability to get after the pass rusher. But I would like to see him as camp go on. When they do those mix and match, I want to see him up against the ones. I want to see him up against the Gents and a Marpet and a Cap. I want to see how he does and performs. He might have gone up against him today. I wasn't there to witness that, but that's where I really want to see him. For me, Ledbetter is the ultimate utility guy. I'm not sure you're a basketball guy or any of the listeners are, but Ryan Gomes is a player for the Celtics, and he wasn't going to do anything specifically well, but he was going to do everything good. And I think that's Ledbetter. He's a good backup. He's going to be able to, you know, stop the run a little bit, rush the passer a little bit, hold the blockers at the point of attack. He's going to be able to do all that stuff.
You can see that.
He looked like Dr. Evil now.
my cat has made a cameo. There he goes.
He can do a little bit of everything good, but not anything exceptional. So I think that's really what you're labeling at. Whereas you diagnosed Khalil Davis's game, you know, he's going to be a pass rusher disruptor. His run stopping ability is going to be a work in progress. Well, he showed some progress. It's just going to come down to a numbers game, really. And that's what it's, and it's funny that we're talking about this and we're talking about the back of the back of the back of the end guys.
Yeah.
The seventh defensive tackle.
Gotta hope that you hope you never see play.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be a battle between those two. I think, like I said, I think Khalil Davis, based on the different ability he brings and the difference making that he can, bring as a sub rusher, I think he'll probably get the nod over Ledbetter. But I wouldn't not be surprised to see them try to sneak him on the practice squad. I just think another team might see him as a really good backup and try to swipe him away.
So just to finish off and then go ahead, Steve. So I'm hearing after, we're going to put McClendon in there. I know that you're not 100% sold on him. We're going to put him in there. After that, from what you've seen and sort of the feeling around Peter Report, and I don't want to kind of put words in their mouth, but from your ranking right now, after that, you're thinking Davis, Ledbetter, and then guy from Washington who I can't really pronounce.
Benning Potowaya,
Yeah. I'm going to call him Poke.
You'd go with the top four, McClendon, Pat O'Connor, and then Khalil Davis would probably round up my group.
Oh, Pat O'Connor. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Sorry, Steve.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, he mentioned, JC mentions Ryan Gomes. I'm just glad he didn't bring up Brian Scalabrini. if we're going to go that route for a guy that doesn't do anything great, but just is out there with the motor going. Ren, of course, is big on the defensive line. I'm on the other side of the football, looking at the offensive line. And for me, the guy that I've been looking forward to hearing about is Robert Hainsey, because, they take him in the third round this year. And the question is, what were they going to do with him? And we saw during mini camp and we saw during OTAs him working in the middle of the offensive line at center. What have you seen from Hainsey here in the first, few days in pads? When it comes to him working on the offensive line, is he going to be the successor to Ryan Jensen? Seeing as Jensen's only got one more year left on his deal, does he become that interior offensive lineman guru here that they try and make play three positions? Does he play guard and does he back up both guards and the center this year? What do you see as the role for Robert Hainsey this year?
Well, I think that's what the coaching staff would like. I think I don't think they necessarily want to move on from Jensen. It will come down to contract and terms. Jensen was a player I thought that they would have already restructured and extended just to open up cap space as one of the league's top centers. And you really don't want to mess with an offensive line, especially a center with a quarterback, that connection that they have. But when they drafted Hainsey, it was kind of a lot of fans were kind of, and me included, actually, were kind of scratching, really, this guy?
Yeah.
Tackle? Especially because fan favorite was still on the board. And the center from Wisconsin, Whitewater.
Oh, yeah.
Escaping me right now for
Chubby Tubby.
Yeah, he's now with the Broncos. But, since he's come into camp, starting a rookie camp, he's taken every single snap at center. He hasn't been out tackle, hasn't been at guard. He's been taking every snap at center. And that's continued here into training camp. Pads come on, still at center with the second unit. One day last week, Ryan Jensen was out before pads came on. He was taking snaps with the starting unit. Today, Ryan Jensen again out taking snaps with a starting unit. I did not hear anything about him having any miscues snapping the ball, but it's an adjustment for him. He's never played center. The first time he snapped the ball, really, not messing around, was in January when he was preparing for the combine. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy who's learned the position in 7-8 months and has looked really, really well. Now, he's had his rookie moments going up against Vita Vea or, some of these other guys, and they've gotten... Ledbetter, had a good rep on him the other day as well in 11-on-11s. He's had his moments where he's looked like a rookie center. For the most part, I've been very, very impressed with how quickly he's been able to not only assimilate to a position he's never played, but how quickly he's been able to be proficient at it. I mean, I haven't really not seen one weakness in his game. He's making calls at the line. He's being able to pick up switches and you know, identify blitzers. He's been able to snap the ball really well. Haven't seen any miscues from him. Got adjusted to the towel down his butt crack that Tom likes, so with the baby powder. So he's been able to come in, step in, and I know he will be this team's number two center. Whether he's the successor to Ryan Jensen or not, I think is a different story, because you're also losing Alex Kappa. What they want to do here, and what I've seen a lot
losing of, Alex Kappa, you're calling it?
They might be losing Alex Kappa.
Okay.
They might be losing Alex Kappa. And what I've seen a lot this camp, you know, with other players on the team is, you know, cross-training at multiple positions, especially on the line, and I'll get to that in a minute. But cross-training at multiple positions is something that they've wanted to do. We know Jensen can play guard. We know Marpet can play center. Well, let's get this kid down to play center. We know he can play right tackle. If we can get him to go parallel, we can get him to go staggered stance and be a guard or a tackle. Let's get him the reps here first to make sure we're safe, because you remember last year they didn't have a backup center until they brought in AQ Shipley. Well, here we have a backup center on the roster first, and then we can start messing with this kid and playing with him at guard and whatever the positions that we have. We know, we think he can play that. So whether he's a successor to Ryan Jensen or a successor to maybe Kappa, I mean, that will be remain to be seen. And also draft someone, bring someone in, agree to terms with one of them. But it's definitely going to be, he's been a bright spot in camp for sure.
Let's face it. You know, he went to Notre Dame. The towel in the butt's probably going to be no problem for him with the baby powder. No, but I am curious, in your opinion, you know, obviously learning the role of center, you know, that's where Ryan Jensen is going to help Hainsey the most. But how big of a help is someone like having someone like Tom, who knows exactly what he feels a center's role needs to be, help someone like Hainsey, who has never, like you said, he's never done any sort of snapping until January?
Well, I don't know how much Brady can actually help him develop as a player, but what Brady can offer him is helping him develop routine and patterns and what Brady likes, and establishing this is what I like, this is what I want to do. So if there's a need for him to come into a game this year, or if Jensen does go and they decide to make him the starting center, they'll be able to hit the ground running because he'll know what Brady's like. The biggest help besides Ryan Jensen is on the roster as a coach, and a brand new coach this year, and that's AQ Shipley.
Thank you.
Because he's been in this system for multiple years, going back to Bruce Arians' time in Pittsburgh, then into Arizona, and then last year. So he knows what, you know, BA wants in a center. He knows what the responsibilities are in the offense. And, you know, Jensen, he's got his own stuff to worry about too. But you got a guy who's essentially, you know, started a game last year for the team when Marpet went out and Jensen had to move to guard. So you have a guy that you can pick brain who's actually played last year on the same team. So I think he's going to be a huge beneficial. And then the coaching staff, the offensive line coaching staff, is just great with Gilbert and everybody else.
Yeah, they're tier one.
That's the wonderful thing about what the Glazers do and what they've allowed BA is to have such a large coaching staff. And I bring this up whenever I get the chance. It's like going to sending your kid to a school that has a teacher and two teacher assistants, right? You're getting more hands-on learning from having more people in the room. You know, the offensive line right now has essentially a center coach with AQ Shipley, a guard coach, and a tackle coach. There's three coaches for the offensive line. And having that one-on-one time and having those opportunities to learn and pick their brain and get the reps, and it's just going to be beneficial for the entire line.
Yeah, good point. Let's move to the outside, the tackles. You know, Donovan Smith, ever since, you know, this coaching staff we just talked about got here, has been trending straight up. Played his best football after the bye week and through the playoffs. Tristan Wirth can do no wrong. You know, it's a move over Chris Evans. Tristan Wirth is playing Captain America from now on. So, yeah, you know, he's going to be that guy's never going to have to. If he stays in Tampa, he'll never pay for a meal or buy a drink for the rest of his life. So we're talking about backup. Is this Josh Wells, who's been with the Bucs a few years, job to lose, or the only player that opted out with the Bucks last year, Brad Seaton, who's also been up and down with the Bucks for a few years? The guy's a monster. He's 6'9", but put him in cleats and a helmet, he looks like he's 7 feet tall. He's easily the biggest player, at least the tallest player on the team. Is it Wells? Is it Seton? Am I forgetting somebody that's been popping at tackle that you may like? Who's do you think is gonna be that active tackle on game day? You know, 3 days in pads, 1 week in training camp, make the call.
Yeah, I definitely think it's Josh Wells. And again, okay, going back to the cross training, is he's seen a lot of time at right tackle as well as left tackle. You know, he's been running the two unit with Seton because really lack of options at tackle. They had Calvin Ashley leave in the middle of camp, replace him with Chidi Okeke, who came in and filled his spot. But they've been kind of splitting time at right and left tackle. Now, I think Josh Wells, it's his spot. He's come in, he's proven, he's had a start. He's, you know, didn't play amazing, but he still did a, you know, valiant effort and did a job enough where he didn't cost you a game, didn't lose you a game, although he did.
Tom Brady still alive.
Two sacks, exactly. But he's definitely the guy. Now, where the interesting part of it, and I'm going to cross-pollinate into the guard competition.
Yeah.
Relevant. It's going to come down to, you got your eight, right? It's going to, Stinney's in there for sure. Hainsey's in there for sure. And Josh Wells is in there for sure. You have your eight. I do think this team will keep a ninth. I don't think they'll keep a 10th because I think they'll want roster flexibility and they'll be able to call up players again like they did last year with the practice squad rules remaining in place. So I think they will have a ninth on the team, and it's going to really come down to their preference. Do they want someone that can play tackle and only tackle as a Brad Seton who's playing, getting time at left and right tackle, or do they want a guard who can play, you know, multiple guard positions and maybe center spot in a pinch? That's where Nick Lavrette, the second year player, spent the entire season on the practice squad. Surprisingly, he's been running with his twos at both left guard and right guard. So they're training him at both guard positions. Now, back in rookie minicamp when he was out here, because of, you know, age requirement, you can come out there if you're second year player or whatever. And at OTAs, he was also getting some snaps at center, especially during voluntary OTAs and rookie minicamp, kind of circling these guys in. So he's got spots at right guard, left guard, and, you know, a little bit of time at center. What surprised me was 2 days ago, which was Saturday, I saw him out there with a third unit at right tackle. So they're training this guy, Nick Lavrette, at right tackle. Yesterday he was out there at right tackle, and today he was also getting reps out at right tackle. So they're training.
Still with the threes today?
I'm not sure about today. Yesterday.
Probably, though. Yeah.
So probably. He's been getting trained at right tackle as well as being the number two left or right guard any given day, any given series, with a two. So it's going to come down to versatility. We know that. Who's going to make the last spot? Who can do more for you on game day if they have to? Who can do it better? Who can do it well? Brad Seton might be, he is probably the better right and left tackle, but do you want a guy who can play right tackle, guard, both guard spots, and potentially center if he definitely needs to? Or do you want to keep the guy who's just going to be your left and right swing tackle when you already have one on the roster? The thing is, there is the thought process is, okay, so you have your starting guards, you have Hainsey, you have you have Stinney, you kind of have four players who can play guard on the roster. You right. have three guys who can play tackle. It's really going to depend on Lavrette's continued development at right tackle, whether they see him as being a guy with his versatility that they want to keep over Seton. I think just being in 3 days worth of camp, the battles come down to him, those two. It's Seton versus Lavrette. Just based on the snaps, based on the units they're working with. Yesterday during one-on-ones, Lavrette had a great play at guard, just standing up and pushing Khalil Davis right out of the way. This was after the first unit went, and Davis had his way with Ali Marpet. So then he jumped over to the third unit on right tackle. So they're definitely trying to get him as many reps at that spot as they can. It's going to be interesting. Then you guys got guys like John Molchan.
Right.
Started the season last year on the active roster, just to go on IR for the first couple weeks, then finished out the season on practice squad. You have other guys like
Hutchinson. Everyone was very excited about him.
Yeah, Donald Stanley is another center who. But you have Sedarius Hutchinson, which is a guy I've been looking to see as well. He's a big man. he can, you know, he's got great strength, great ability, great athleticism. I just think it's a numbers game he's going to run into. And while they gave him one of the most guaranteed money contracts out of any undrafted free agent this year,
Bucks have They do that. They do do that. That they will spend extra money to bring in an undrafted free agent. They do it almost every year.
Yeah. So I think the goal is to get him on the practice squad. Unless he just continues to show out, if he can, you know, balls out. He's been mostly running with the threes, had some time with the twos, but I just think at this point, if they're going to go with a guard, it looks like Lavrette's going to be the guy. And if they're going to go with a tackle, it definitely looks like they're going to go with Seton. So still plenty of training camp, you know, for people to prove themselves and change coaching staff's mind, in my mind. And also, you know, knock on wood, but injuries to pop up and give other people opportunities to get in and get more reps, starting reps, etc. Veteran days off like Hainsey had today. So for me right now, if I had to pick a guy, and this goes against what I had, because I had Lavrette on the practice squad. I had Sedarius Hutchinson making the team before camp, but I'm going to go with Lavrette making the roster, Seton right there behind him, with probably Hutchinson, Mulchin after that. And we can get into Donald Stanley and Chidi Okeke, but those guys probably won't be out of camp. Mulchin, Seton, probably, or Hutchinson, two of those three will probably go to the practice squad if they can make it through the waiver process.
As we move off of the line of scrimmage, finally, I want to talk about the running back situation, because it is. I know. Rent hates when I get
there's nothing to talk about.
Sure, there is.
Okay.
Not starting running back situation. There's no question what the
four guys are the four guys.
The four guys are the four guys. We know what the roles of the first two guys are going to be,
and the fourth.
I'm curious about that third and fourth, you know, Gio Bernard versus.
Oh, you want a status update? Okay.
Because to me, I thought this was
a ranking. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, status update. I mean, they've all looked good. And
you're talking about Giovardi. That's not a word.
Giovanni Bernard.
There we go.
Sometimes he just makes receptions that look like a wide receiver is doing it. And his pass protection, we already all know about that. It's just showing up. You know, It's going to be a 1-2-3 punch. I mean, a lot of people want to say 1-2 punch with Gio and with Rojo and Lenny, but I think it's really going to be a 1-2-3 punch. This offense is going to be able to be so diverse and so dynamic that, I mean, literally, you could put Gio out there on a running play, running behind this offensive line, he could have success. Keyshawn Vaughn has been really, really, has looked really sharp. Drew the praise of Coach Arians yesterday.
More to that. What do you mean sharp? Like, what's he doing well? Is it jump cuts? Is it speed? Like, makes it? Yeah. Okay.
He looks in much better shape than he did last year, which is, you know, to be expected with a full off season. He had started the season last year with COVID, and so that really hindered him. But yeah, he looks like, you know, he looks faster, he looks quicker, he understands the game better. He's getting in and out of his cuts much better as a receiver, is catching a lot of the balls thrown his way. I think he's had one drop. He's been able to turn up some of them upfield for touchdowns. As a runner, he looks a lot more decisive when picking lanes, switching to run through. Again, you know, it's a third day in pads, so I don't want to say too much about what this player could be, but I really think if he can carve out a role on special teams somewhere, even if it's just one or two units, he's going to be active on game days, and he's going to be worked in the game plan. You can see why the coaching staff liked him so much to draft him in the third round, and they had a second round grade on him the year prior if he would have came out. I don't see how he's not featured on in some way in some of these offensive game plans just because of his versatility. He's a good runner. He's a good receiver. He's good at pass blocking. Again, it's just growing as a player, making that first year, second year jump. And so far he's looked pretty good at camp. Again, third practice. I can't stress third practice in pads. Haven't seen him go up against anybody but his own team, no preseason or anything else. But you know what I've seen so far, I think he should definitely, and he will definitely be in the mix at running back in the rotation to get snaps on the field.
See, that's the sort of thing that I was curious about, because everybody's, you know, we talk about playoff Lenny, we talk about Rojo, you know, they bring in Gio Bernard and you know, going to Tom Brady in the offseason and going, what do you think of Gio Bernard? Oh, I like that. Let me know if how I can help. You know, I thought that Vaughn was being, I don't want to say overlooked, but the fact is that, you know, there was thought and from some people that you know, he was in the doghouse for all the things that happened last year.
So.
Yeah, and yes, I'm not saying
you had Rojo going off, almost hit 1,000 yards. You had Leonard Fournette, who really didn't turn it on until after that bye week and after Rojo went down. Mm-hmm. Then you bring a guy like Gio, and then you look at the draft class. I mean, Tristan Wirfs, you know, should have been a Pro Bowl right tackle. Mm-hmm. Antoine Winfield probably should have won the Rookie of the Year. Yep. And then you move to your third round pick, and you know, Keyshawn Vaughn struggled to see the field, had a few fumbles. You know, he did have a really nice game against the Lions where he ran for 65 yards.
Yep.
You know, then he makes a mistake in the playoff game against Washington. But you look at you look at fans' expectations versus team expectations, and while the team, I'm sure, wants, you know, expecting more out of him, fans' expectations for a third-round pick running back, you know, when you look at the first two picks, it's through the roof. So, mm-hmm. You know, he's the only guy left on contract after this year. Now, they could bring back any one of the three ahead of him, or they could use a first-round pick, much to Ren's dismay, at a running back next year in the draft. But, you know, that it remains to be seen. So you want to get the guy reps. You want to get him out there. And, you know, it's up to him to make sure he's putting the work to be able to get out there. And so far, what I've seen in camp, he's been doing that, just that. And he's been getting reps with the ones, too.
I'm not anti-first-round running back.
Now, yes, you are.
No, I'm not. It depends on what the roster looks like. I'll be perfectly honest. Like, and also, I've sort of already started looking into interior defensive linemen. And again, it's not so. I mean, it's very early. I haven't looked at all of them, but you know, when you sort of look at like the best defensive players or the top 10 players in SEC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12, not a lot of interior defensive linemen are being talked about. Now, of course, they have to play the whole season, and of course, that's where I want them to go. But if it ends up being a class like last year, I'm not going to like say the Bucs need to take a first round, you know, defensive tackle. Like, I wouldn't want them to take Christian Barmore just because we need to get youth there. I wouldn't mind taking a running back. Who was the kid from Alabama? Whoever everyone liked. Okay. Or if ATN was there, like, I wouldn't mind that. Now, if you're picking top 10. And you're taking a running back, like, that's just stupid. You're not top 10 because you can't run the ball. You're not top 10 because you don't have an offensive line, you don't have a defense, you don't have any weapons, you don't have a quarterback. Like, that's why you're top 10. You know, Ezekiel Elliott's not going to fix that for you. So, just want to go on the record.
All right. So, what, we're going to hop over to the defensive side now?
Quit controlling the show. JC,
I want to run through these things for you.
I just want to see if Carney wants to talk about kickers and punters before we go to.
Jose Borgalis has looked really sharp. You know, he's okay. Been.
Thank you, JC. It's very nice. Thank you. All right, let's go to cornerbacks. Of course, the top three are locked in. When you look at this roster, and you have to point to something that, hey, this may not go the way we think it's going to go. It's going to be cornerback just because they're young, a little bit of inexperience, lots of up and down. Of course, they all played up last year after the bye week and through the playoffs. Carlton Davis is a top 10 corner, could possibly get in the top 5 conversation this year. But Dean and SMB for their careers have been very roller coaster. But they're still locked in as starters. You could make an argument if you want to have that talk that SMB might start playing more outside and then do the Rondé Barber jump inside on when they go nickel. Don't really care about that. Ross Cockrell might be a safety, might give them position flexibility so they can carry that extra offensive lineman or an extra edge or something like that. But Cockrell's sort of there in the fourth. There's lots of guys out there making plays like Brooks and Hamilton and I can't even read my own writing. Who's the guy from Navy?
Cameron Kinley.
Kinley. So, and there's lots of guys making all these plays. So, and of course, in training camp, you carry a lot of cornerbacks. So who stood out? Who do you think is sort of leading the leader in the clubhouse at that fifth spot? Do you think Cockrell is the fourth guy? Let's talk. Yeah, talk to us about corners.
It's tough. I mean, it's really tough because all the corners have been really inconsistent. Cockrell has split time, and you know he's in the safety. He's doing meetings in the safety room right now. Whether they're gonna, and he's looked really good. I mean, three interceptions today at practice.
Right.
Going, building off, you know, his sister's win at the Olympics to send her to the gold medal game. But Cockrell has looked really good at safety. So, you know, your question there is he the fourth cornerback as well as the fourth safety? You know, that's a question to have. But as, and then that will open up, you know, the fifth cornerback spot. If they're keeping him directly at safety, now that could possibly open up the fourth and fifth spot at cornerback. Out of all the guys you mentioned, Antonio Hamilton probably has made the most splash plays, but he's also been very inconsistent and has gotten burnt a lot by, you know, a guy like Mike Evans and such and such. In a perfect world, Ren, you want your fifth cornerback to be Ryan Smith, who did not see a snap at cornerback last year and was strictly special teams. So really, it comes down to watching special teams, and you know they've done some work, but not enough. Not enough for me to really say, okay, this guy's going to be the fifth cornerback because of his special teams prowess. If I had to pick right now, you know, Nate Brooks had a great play. He had a great play on Sunday where he tipped the ball up into the air and then intercepted it himself. The very next play, he got burnt deep for a touchdown.
It seems to be that's what happens. It seems to be the common theme sort of with these guys after the top three. Yeah, it's like, oh, what a great play. Oh, like that was your guy. See the guy dancing in the end zone? That was your man. Like, what are you doing?
Cameron Kimley is just, I feel like AB is bullying him at this point. You know, he's just been getting burnt. He's made a few good plays. And then Herb Miller's quietly had a decent camp too. He's got
Herb.
He's made some plays. You know, if they're going to go with three cornerbacks and Ross as a safety, probably Herb Miller and Antonio Hamilton. If they're going to go with just a fifth cornerback, I want to say Antonio Hamilton just because of his special teams. Herb Miller knows the defense a little bit more because he's been here, but I think Antonio Hamilton probably gives you, I mean, he's been on the active, he's played in every game last year for the Chiefs, including the Super Bowl as a special teamer. I think if you're looking for strictly special teams, that's the guy you might want to go with. Only thing is that, you know, his recent comments suggest he's anti-vax, and if Herb Miller is vaccinated compared to Antonio Hamilton, which way do they lean that way? I hate to put that politics into it, but it is
going vaccination to be, isn't politics.
It's going to be brought into the discussion. So for me, it's between those two guys with Cameron Kinley, you know, lucky if he earns a practice squad spot. We'll see Chris Wilcox, who just got promoted off the PUP today. We'll see what he can do and how he can add to that competition. But again, without more special teams work, without observing more kickoff, punt return, see how many units these guys are actually on, it's tough for me to say, yes, this guy's definitely the fifth. But let's go with Antonio Hamilton right now, slightly above Herb Miller with Brooks and then Cameron Kinley, you know, trailing in behind.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, Wilcox and how, you know, you want Ryan Smith to be your fifth corner, only play special teams and never play one down of actual defense. It seems that Wilcox is just like a taller, faster, it's hard to say he's a better tackler, even though he hasn't missed a tackle since like 2017, version of Ryan Smith. And you could make an argument and it'd be hard for you to get me off the premise of the reason Chris Wilcox is here is because Ryan Smith is not.
Yeah. And I mean, you're going to look at this guy and obviously it's going to be his first, you know, real time out there with pads going up
against
NFL players. And it's going to take an adjustment period for him. It's how quickly can he adjust to the NFL speed? How quickly can he, you know, continue to improve and show up? And, you know, he's going to get chances to play probably, you know, he will get chances to play in this preseason game coming up next weekend. He'll get chances to show off in practice. And just like any young guy drafted in the seventh round, you know, for, you know, what appears to be special teams purposes, he's got to show up and he's got to put the film on there. And if he does that, I mean, I don't think you look at his size, look at his speed. I don't think there's any reason why he can't carve out that role and take that fifth cornerback spot. It's wide open. Out of all the spots right now, I think that fifth cornerback spot is wide open that people are fighting for. I mean, you look at other spots and it's okay. It's down to him and down to him. Maybe him. Cornerback is wide open.
Anybody who's there, anybody who's dressed.
It could be anybody's game right now. Really can't go one way or another on cornerback. Like I said, maybe Antonio Hamilton just because of his experience right now.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So on staying with special teams here, we're going to go to my favorite guy, as Ren knows, who is Jaden Darlin, Jalen Darden.
He's darling. He's darling on this podcast. Yes.
Jaden Darling on this podcast.
Steve called him Jalen Darling the first time he said his name. So
yeah, yeah.
Me being the gracious co-host automatically made that a rule.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a rule that Jalen Darden has to be known as Jaden Darlin on this podcast. You know, is he now like the biggest special teams threat that this team has had since like say Michael Spurlock? I mean, you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, his ability to just go is, you know, especially even as a wide receiver. I mean, he kind of beat Carlton Davis right off the line, but today for a nice touchdown. But I mean, just his ability, you know, his punt turn, his field vision. He was number three in the nation last year in college with yards after catch. So he's got great vision to see the field. And once a guy gets going, it's really hard to bring him down. He's very elusive, quick, twitch, fast, all the above. As a punt returner, he looks to be the same way. They've only done a few practices that I've been able to watch with the pads on where they're actually tackling. And it's still Mickens is getting most of the first returns, and then Jalen's getting out there. And even Scotty Miller's been out there a little bit. Yesterday's practice, they did have a punt, and for the first punt, it was Jalen Darden out there. Didn't do much with it. It was a short, shallow punt, but I think it's his game to lose. It just continue to improve, show you can do it in a game, show you can do it when it counts, and he's going to be the guy. And, you know, you look at his career. He kind of backed off in the recent years at college because he started ascending more as a wide receiver, but you know, he had a touchdown, he had a good punt. He'll be up back there on kick returns. He's definitely on the roster. I mean, he's taking reps with the ones. So, it's going to be a really uphill battle for Mickens to try to beat him out, but he looked really great as a wide receiver too. And we know what he can do as a kick returner, as a punt returner. Mickens was not that great. I think he had averaged 6 yards per return. So it's just going to come down to more reps again. For these young guys, it's more reps proving you can do it and you're not going to be a liability in a game. Starts with the preseason, then to the regular season, and so on and so forth. But if they can keep a guy like Mickens around on the practice squad as insurance, I think they will for certain. But I think Jalen Darden's got the job wrapped up.
All right, last one, and then we'll go to a rapid fire. We've talked a little bit about it. Safeties. Talk about the beginning of the show. I'm not really interested in having a conversation if Edward pushes out Whitehead. I do have a galaxy brain theory that Devin White's speed on the inside kind of may negate Whitehead's best ability, which is coming up setting the edge. So you know that's I haven't formulated yet. Shouldn't even brought it up. Anyway, so you got Whitehead, you got Edwards, you got Antonio Winfield. Who got Cockrell? We're gonna put for this conversation, we're gonna put Cockrell as the fourth corner.
Okay.
Who's looked good? Who do you got? Okay, but just anyone besides Javon Hagan.
It's Javon Hagan. I mean, Javon Hagan's gonna be the fourth.
This has been a back and forth with
destroys Ren.
Well, I mean, this has been a back and forth with JC and I for a while. We were in like a fantasy football Zoom type of thing, and all of a sudden JC out of nowhere goes, "Oh look, Javon Hagan!" Like guys, like he texts him or something, and had to like drop. And I'm like, "Who the fuck's Javon Hagan?" You know, he's like trying to name drop, and it's like, "What are you talking about? Like, who the hell are you talking about?" So he's been a huge Javon Hagan guy because he's had his number for like 2 years, and every time he brings him up, I'm just like Homer. So this is where this starts. Besides your dad, Javon Hagan,
there's nobody else.
Nobody except how can anyone claim your bias? There's absolutely no one else. No one at all.
They had undrafted guy Lawrence White, who's made some plays and he's showed up a little bit here and there. He's also been picked on a little bit. They also have Chris Cooper, who they just brought in from Stony Brook.
Right.
He was formerly with the Denver, never played a game. They had Augie Contressa that they released, and then Raven Green's been out for the first week, so he's only been back.
Right, Ravens hasn't been playing.
He's only been back for the last 3 days since they put pads on. He's been doing well on special teams, but as far as safety play goes, Javon's been running with that third group the entire time. And, you know, yesterday he had a nice break on the ball against Mike Evans. Should have been an interception. Dropped it. Today again.
Stonehands Hagen, as you know around here.
also had another PBU today, which could have been an interception. So if they go, you know, it depends on what they're going to do and the versus what they want to do with Ross Cockrell. But it sounds like
you're saying that Hagen's biggest competition for the safety position, if Raven Green, you know, we'll see.
Cockrell.
Yeah, is Cockrell. Yeah. So if they move Cockrell to safety, that's kind of where Hagen could be the odd man out.
Exactly. And, you know, Raven Green, again, 3 days in, we haven't seen enough of him yet, you know, to really make a educated opinion as a safety. He's been on special teams and looked well there, but I mean, I'm not an X's and O's on special teams. I don't know many people who are, if you're not special teams coaches. So, I mean, that's kind of how it shakes down right now. If you're going to go, if Cockrell's the fourth cornerback, Hagen's probably your fourth safety. If they move Cockrell over to safety permanently, then we're looking at a numbers crunch there. How do they make it work? Do they keep five safeties because they have, it's almost like, you know, what do you do? Do you keep five safeties and you have Cockrell play both positions? So it just gives them a lot of flexibility, especially on game days as well.
Right. So when they cut Hagen, will he be sleeping on your couch?
No, he'll be on the practice.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll be sleeping on the practice squad,
or he'll be claimed.
We've talked about Cockrell a couple of times, of course. I just want to know, do you think he gets mad that he's no longer the best athlete in his family, or the most well-known athlete on his family?
He had a one-upper today with three interceptions, so we'll see. He does have a ring. She might get a gold medal, but he's got a Super Bowl ring. So
I think this is a fun story to be around, is to watch these NFL athletes and their family members who are right now in the middle of the Olympics. I mean, you saw Lions quarterback David Blough and his wife.
Anna, his fiance,
that's in there as well.
Beat out in that race today.
Yes. So we got a one. It's all about one-upsmanship in the NFL. Yeah.
I think Robert Quinn's sister.
Yeah, she won a gold medal too.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the fun part of the show. First off, JC, nice job, man. Home run. Very, very long-winded answers, which, you know, is what we look for. It's just like, you know, okay, Frank. Third string QB, go. And you talk for 10 minutes. It's perfect. It's great. Think you did a good job. I'm sure a lot of people already know your Peter Report, but this is just a way to sort of introduce you to, you know, our listening base. But what I've done is I'm doing a sort of like a rapid fire. And I talked about this. I don't remember if I talked about it at the beginning of the show, but I definitely told you pre-show. You can hem and haw, but you can't give long-winded answers. Okay. So this is like, one sentence max. Okay. Now, some of these we kind of talked about and ruined. Thanks, Carney.
Sorry.
I didn't tell you all the questions, so it's not your fault. Okay. And we're going to go through these. All right. Here we go. There's five of them. No time limit, so don't feel pressure. Take your time, but do not be long-winded. Is Darden as quick as advertised?
Yes. Especially off the line. He's beating guys like Carlton Davis out.
He's got elite feet, Antonio Brown type feet at the line.
It's impressive.
All right. Joe Tryon's best attribute.
It's quick off the snap. I mean, this, again, as advertised, he gets off the snap and can really create havoc so far in the backfield.
Will Cameron Kinley make the team?
Unfortunately, no. He looks, he's going against top competition. He just looks out of place. Practice squad candidate, potentially. With the year of seasoning, we'll see.
Are you crying, Carney?
A little bit. I'm a Navy guy. I like guys like Keenan Reynolds and Cameron Kinley to make teams, especially when they get the Secretary of Defense to waive their military commitment so they can get this opportunity.
Yeah, hopefully Cameron Kinley is going to be really successful as a person, though, so don't worry about it.
Yes, he is.
Will O.J. Howard be tight end one, number one by the end of the season?
Health is going to be a big ish factor. Mm-hmm. But I think he could put up tight end one numbers. I still think Gronk is the guy who gets to start.
All right. Here are your answers. You can answer happy or elated. Okay. Are you happy or elated that you got Mark Cook fired and has no insurance and is on the brink of starvation? Again, we're looking for happy or elated.
I took Taylor Jenkins' spot when he left for the Plant City time. So I had nothing to do with that.
Okay. Noted. Chicken. Got it. Well, man, tell everybody where they can find you, what you're working on, what Peter Report's working on. You know the spiel. Do everything. And then talk about Locker Room, too.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at JCAllenNFL. Give me a follow there. Almost at 1,000. Let's get it up there. Always tweeting stuff from Peter Report, anything Bucks related. It's pretty much the one-stop shop for anything Bucks, whether it's from the Bucks themselves, PFF, Tampa Bay, any news or anything going on, and all of our articles and stuff at Peter Report. I'll be at training camp. We'll be pumping out best quotes of the day. We'll be pumping out training camp highlights along with a bunch of different other stories. So definitely check us out at Peter Report on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, if you haven't already. Other than that, guys, if you have any questions, feel free to shoot me DMs, and I'd be happy to chop it up with you guys there as well.
And Locker Room?
Yes, Locker Room, now Spotify Green Room. It's a great place to go and just converse with.
Oh, yes, fans. Sorry, Green Room.
whether you're doing a watch party, whether you want to talk about culture, music, sports, definitely check that out. Give me and Ren a follow on there. Every week we'll do a Peter Report room and talk Bucks. You guys are encouraged to come up on stage, ask questions, join the conversation. It's a great time.
And what Celsius are you drinking today?
Yeah.
The watermelon. It's one of my favorite.
Terrible.
Really good.
Jesus Christ. Hagen, Hagen and watermelon. Like the worst.
I will join Ren in I'm not a watermelon person either.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's like,
from New England. I don't eat watermelon.
It's melon, but we put a bunch of water in it so it doesn't taste like anything. Delish. Anyway, JC, we've banged on you enough. Thanks so much for coming on. Like, again, it was a home run. You hit it out of the park. And yes. We're going to drop you out, and we're going to talk about what you said was smart and what you said was dumb. And then we're going to wrap up the show. But again, thank you very much. We'll have you back on this year if you want to come on.
Absolutely.
Sure. Thanks,
you
guys.
Better come on, for crying out loud.
I'll be here. Don't worry.
Thanks, JC. He was really good. That was very impressive.
Yeah, man. He's a talker.
Yeah, I like that. Like that. So, I'm a talker.
Yeah, we're all talkers, Tom. Tom, I keep calling you Tom. Tom Carney, Tom play Brady. Baseball with him. I'm sorry.
I'm the goat. I'm the goat.
You're the goat.
Tom Brady.
So, I mean, besides, you know, the hating, you know, loving watermelon, I should say, and Javon Hagen fanboy. What did you like about it? What did you find interesting that he said that we learned about Buccaneers players in training camp today?
Well, I mean, other than agreeing with you that the Bucs need to go out and get an interior defensive lineman on the first night of the draft
right.
next year, you know, I really am interested, and I thought it was good to see and to hear JC talk about Robert Hainsey. I'm really interested, like I said, with where they are with Ryan Jensen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious to see what the path of Robert Hainsey is, and I thought that was, to me, the most interesting part of the conversation, is seeing the growth of Robert Hainsey from a guy that played at a big time college school and mm-hmm. finding out what it takes to play at the highest level with the most elite players in the entire world, the most elite athletes, I should say, in the entire world.
Yeah, when Hainsey got his first start at Notre Dame, or no, that can't be true. Or maybe, yeah, when he got his first start at Notre Dame, everyone on that offensive line is on an NFL team.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and of course, the best known is Quentin Williams for the Colts, who went like three or four overall 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. You know, the talk about Ledbetter, that was interesting to me because he was just a guy that was hanging on like by his, you know, by his nails.
By the short and curlies. Yeah.
Yeah. By the short and curlies on this team. He'd go up and down when he come up, like you really didn't notice him too much. I should have asked about Anthony Nelson. Cause like, that's my fault. Cause he's been, getting some pressures and sort of outplaying what he's been so far for the Buccaneers. I thought that was cool. The cornerback position, you know, I think he's right. I think he nailed it right on the head. It's like anybody but Kinley. It is so wide open. If something clicks for Kinley, you know, it could be just something simple, and you see it all the time. Like we saw with Devin White last year, you know, he gets COVID and he comes back. All of a sudden, he's the best coverage linebacker in football. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't cover like a grandma and a walker beforehand. So, you know, something just kind of clicks. And you look at Joe Tryon, you know, he hasn't played football since 2019. And I think he had 8 sacks his junior year or sophomore year or whatever it was. But if you look at the numbers, like 6 of them came like in the last 4 games. Like something just clicked there. So, you know, don't give hope on, you know, the Navy goats, the Navy ninnies. What's
the midshipmen, the middies.
But but why is it a goat then?
Well, because they're the goat. They're the greatest of all time. The yard goats. So
what are yard goats?
They're goats that you use to instead of like lawnmowers. They chew up the grass. And
okay, this makes no sense. We'll have to talk about this later. No one cares.
So yeah. the thing about Kinley is you mentioned the intangibles, that he is. And I think that there's going to be a team out there, if it's not the Buccaneers, that'll go, you know what? He may not be he may be the last guy. He may be 53 but we like his makeup as a person and we'll give him that spot, or we need that on our practice squad. We need another cornerback. And they'll look around and they'll go, you know, who's out there, who's available. And they'll see someone like Kinley, and just because of his makeup because of his time at the Naval Academy, you know, he'll have an opportunity somewhere. I have that feeling. If it's not
Annapolis, is no joke. Like it's seriously the best of the best of the best.
It is.
And then
it
he is. Was class president. And then he gave the speech when Kamala Harris showed up. I mean, this guy, you know, first off, they take the best of the best of the best, and he's the best of the best of the best as far as the Naval Academy has to offer. Mm-hmm. I think sort of those attributes will get him almost as many chances in the NFL that he's willing to take, to be honest. I'm not so far with you as in like the 53 man, but I think he'll be able to sort of hang around on practice squads for at least 3 years. You know, if that's sort of a route he wants to take. What else did it? Anything else that he said that you were like, huh? I don't know. Talk about Hainsey.
Yeah,
I was. Leverett has been getting some pub. I heard a little bit about how people were exciting about him. That's interesting because, I mean, if Leverett is going to be able to play tackle, then I mean, we were running a little long on offensive line, so I didn't bring it up to him. But I don't really think Stinney is sort of like, you know, in cement as JC thinks. I mean, he wasn't the reason, obviously, the Bucs lost, you know, a game, because they didn't when he was in. But he was definitely he wasn't spectacular.
No.
You know, he didn't give up a sack, but, you know, a lot of it had to do with getting the ball out and the offense they're running and all that type of stuff. So, I mean, I don't, if, you know, Leverett's doing such a good job, and I know Allie talked about him and brought his name up. Like that all the interior offensive line tackle swing, it seems to be there's so many options for them now that guys can play both inside and outside. It just might not be traditional, like, okay, Wells, you're the tackle for, you know, if anybody gets hurt, and Hainsey, you're the interior guy if anybody gets hurt, and we'll just roll like that through the season. Like, this might be a little different. Plus, I think the rules are intact where you can have 55, or was it 56 last year, active players, as long as one's an offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
They did that last year, and I think they're doing it again this year. So that also opens the door for some.
I love the versatility option. You know, the positional versatility thing is, you know, that's an analytic thing. You know, people think, you know, there aren't analytics in football, and to which I
who
say
thinks that.
There are people that think, you know, it's all about strength and speed and size and ability. But well, there's a lot. Well, there is it, you know, and football is a lot of strength and speed and size and ability. But the analytical game is really starting to show itself in football. You know, it's not just baseball and to a lesser extent basketball and hockey. But analytics are starting to be seen in football. And one of the biggest things about analytics is that you find in analytics is positional versatility.
Yeah.
And so when you have a guy that can play all five positions on the offensive line, he's a much more valuable player than someone that can just play, let's say, right guard.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a guy that can play.
Because it's really all about matchups. And analytics really like can show you where to take advantage of matchups on, like, it's right in front of you.
Yep.
Like, you know, Devin White can't cover, you know, you know, it's, you know, SMB like double moves, like he'll bite every time, like that's, and then so running with matchups and be able to be multiple, especially now, like you said, in today's NFL game, and the coaching staff and the coaching has gotten so good. That's what really made someone like Cockrell and Edwards really valuable, because like you play, okay, say you play the Chiefs. Well, you're going to want Edwards and Winfield in there. But if you're playing the Titans, you're going to want Winfield and Whitehead in there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just because what they do in matching up. So yeah, it's versatility is the way it's at. I've thought about this, and I've actually thought about trying to tweet it into Stroud so he can answer. It's like we have three championship level professional sports teams right now, and they're all super versatile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all are, like, you know, basically the Rays invented it. You saw sort of how Cooper with the Lightning would switch up his, especially his defense, depending on which, you know, like Chen, like he, you know, we needed him for the Island series. Didn't really need him anywhere else. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And so, and then with the Bucks, you know, offensively and defensively, we've seen Devin White rush from the, you know, from an outside linebacker position. We've seen JPP drop in coverage. I've seen Dominican Sue and Vita Vea drop in coverage. We talked about the safeties and SMB being able to play inside, outside, like all these things are to your advantage when you're looking to take care of matchups. So it's exciting.
Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch.
Oh yeah.
The rest of the preseason, and, you know, even getting into preseason games, you know, they're the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
Not this year. No, I'm actually excited because I think we know what we've got from the front. You know, most people are there. Oh, I want to see Tom, and I want to see Mike.
Right. How's the offense look? It's going to be great.
Yes. It's going to be fantastic.
give me 8 quarters of Kyle Trask, please. Seriously.
We're going to have that.
Yeah.
We're going to have that. And the only thing that I wish that I could have asked, of JC is there a scenario where we keep four?
Is there
four QBs? Is there a scenario?
Yeah, and this was also a question I was going to ask him, but, you know, it just didn't kind of go flow organically. I was going to ask him, I almost put it in the hot take. I should have taken out the Darden one because we answered that and put this in, was who's the player that the Bucks are going to redshirt? You've seen it with, I know there was another Buck, I keep forgetting, but a few years ago it was Kenny Bell. Like, they liked him. They knew he wasn't really going to make the team. They're afraid to put him through waivers. So, oh, son, you blew your hamstring. Oh, I did? Yeah. You're on IR for the year. Come back next year. And okay. Then 2 years ago, they did it with Kota Dixon, the safety out of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. You know, he was looking good. And BA even said when he got hurt that he was playing so well, they were going to start playing him with the ones and see if he could win the starting job. I think this was Mike Edwards' rookie year. And they IR'd him. And it's like, you know, it's like, okay, you twisted your ankle. Well, that's a 3-week injury. No, you're going on IR. You're going to go with the team. You're going to go all the meetings. You're going to go all the teams, and then you're going to come back. I think if I were the Bucks, I'd IR Kyle Trask. Because once preseason's over, he's not going to get any reps in practice. He can go all to the QB meetings. He can watch all the film. Ryan Griffin can run the practice squad. And that's what I would do. I would keep 4, but only 3 could play. Plus, I also think they're keeping the same IR rules as they did last year. Instead of losing him for the whole year or waiting till week 9 before you can bring him back to the, you know, on the practice field and see if they're quote unquote well enough to play and then activate him week 10. I think it's only 4 weeks this year, like it was last year, because mm-hmm. of like the sort of like the COVID rules. So that's what I would do. If I was GM the Bucks, Kyle, man, you have a nasty hangnail. That is going to take 22 weeks to heal up.
I love him. But yeah, I mean, that to me, when it comes to, you know, that situation, the quarterback situation, it's the only, you know, the big question is, you know, can we keep 4 in some way, shape or form? And that, and obviously, you know, IR is the way that you're going to have to.
And it's so hard this year because you want to keep like 8 wide receivers.
Exactly.
You know? And you want to keep like, say, 2, can we 4, keep, can we you want to keep 6 edge guys.
Yeah.
You want to keep 6.
Can we keep 6 edge guys? Can we keep 8 corners? Can we keep 6 safeties?
Yeah. Well, not, I don't know about safety, but like wide receiver.
No, because that means that your boy Hagan is going to be on the club.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a personal thing. But you know, it's like, do you really want to lose somebody like Herb Miller? Like, do you really want, like there's nothing. Dustin Watson did do something wrong. He had 2 pick sixes like in the first 4 weeks. Because he ran, yeah, and then you
ran Jameis routes. You can't run Jameis routes, for crying out loud.
I don't know what he did, but yeah, I don't want to lose Justin Watson's speed. I don't, you know, but heck, I mean, like even going 7 deep, like so you got Evans, Godwin, Brown, Miller, Tyler Johnson. That's 5, 6, Darlin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like. A lot of teams don't carry 6. Now we're going 7 just to keep Justin Watson, you know? And what about Mickens?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that's where like the 4th quarterback, you know, you want to have Griffin there. The writing's probably on the wall for him. They're going to keep Blaine Gabbert. I think Blaine Gabbert, again, I'll go on record. I think Blaine Gabbert could win 11 games in this offense with this team.
I tend to agree with you.
Thanks.
I thought on a 16 game season, I thought, you know, 10. And yeah. With the 17th game now, sure.
Bump it to 11. Yeah, he can win. He's going to win. He can win 18 out of 17. Guarantee it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. So, you know, that's what I would do again, with the 4 quarterback situation. Can you keep 4? Yeah, you can, but you're going to hurt yourself in so many, you're going to let go a really good player for 3 guys that aren't going to play, that you really hope don't play. And the other guys you do hope play. So mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's going to be a nasty, migraine, 72 week migraine. For Kyle Trask. Come back you've in 3 years.
You've lost your sense of smell, Kyle.
Yeah, that's it. Yes. Yes, that's it. Do you ever see Joe versus the Volcano?
Oh, my God.
Brain cloud? Yeah. Kyle, you got a brain cloud.
I love that. That movie is so bad, but it is
so bad. I know, and it's like Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
I know. Yeah, how could you go wrong with Tom Hanks?
How do you mess that up in their prime?
How do you screw that up?
I don't know. They did. I don't know. It's like what the Saints did with Drew Brees. It went 7-9 3 years in a row, and like he was the best quarterback in the league. All right. Defense, anyone? No. Yeah.
That's right.
They're winning games 42-44 or losing games 42-44.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right. Let's get out.
We got work
here
to do, man. Let's get out of here.
We got stuff to do. So give us the Ren addiction. Where can people find you, Ren?
Best place to find me is on Twitter at the PeterCast. I'm always down to talk Buccaneers football. But if your take is too hot or just don't want to put it out there in a Twitter sphere, feel free to slide in my DMs and I'll talk Buccaneers football with you there as well too.
And you can find me at Steve Carney on Twitter and Instagram. And with the Rays at home right now.
Yeah,
you
go
can,
Rays, man. Sweep the dirty socks.
StPete9.com. We've got all the news and analysis up there for the Tampa Bay Rays and the Under the Orange Roof podcast, which is actually going to come out tomorrow because of a whole bunch of scheduling things and other issues that have come up on my end. But we're going to have a little talk with the chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, Chaim Bloom, who used to be, of course, with the Tampa Bay Rays.
Nice.
In the day. So we'll have that conversation.
You're gonna give him the business?
I do give him the business. It's very funny. It was a great conversation. We get into a role in his past life that he wanted to keep hidden, and I found out about it. And
very good. On the hot seat.
Oh, he was wondering where I was going with it, and when I told him where I was going, he laughed his ass off. It was a good conversation. So check that out. UTOR podcast. So that'll do it for this week. Again, subscribe to the PeterCast wherever you're listening to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, whatever, platform. Ratings and reviews, leave them. We like them for the most part, unless you're crapping on me. But that tends to happen more often than not. It's okay.
I don't tend to mind so much.
Yeah.
If you Ren crap on Carney,
Ren doesn't read them. Ren doesn't read them. I do.
I read them. I just don't take them personally.
Yeah, and I'm
you're a sensitive soul, Tom. Sensitive. I mean, Steve.
Again, Tom, the goat.
You're a sensitive goat.
The Navy goat. So until next time, this has been the PeterCast. Ready, Ren?
Yeah.
Go buck yourself.
Oh, I should probably end the broadcast.
Yes!